Bakın. Before we go back to One Bright Pearl, a brief interlude into further expression of the whole universe in 10 directions, which doesn't need to be called just One Bright Pearl, has many names. And there's a Shobogenzo fascicle called Jipo, meaning the 10 directions. And in that, Dogen comments on this saying of the ancient teacher Changsha, is also speaking about the whole universe in 10 directions. He's using that same phrase, and he has some different expressions other than the one bright pearl. But see if you can hear the same description of one bright pearl in these alternate sayings. I propose he's talking about exactly the same thing. It can be said in many different ways. Dogen begins by saying, a single fist, just this, is the whole universe in 10 directions. A sincere heart, just one, is simply these 10 directions, crystal clear. The 10 directions squeeze out the marrow from the bone. And Dogen brings up Changsha Jingshen, who said to the assembly, the entire universe in 10 directions is the single eye of a monk. The eyeball. And Dogen says, this means the single eye of the monk Gotama. The single eye of the monk Gotama is, I have the treasury of the true Dharma eye. Corners and spots in the world of the 10 directions, the universe, of the 10 directions are the objects of Gotama's eye. All corners and spots. This entire universe in the 10 directions is one within the monk's eye. There are eyes that go beyond this. Changsha continued, the entire universe in the 10 directions is the everyday words of a monk. Everyday means ordinary. I'm skipping around a little bit here. The words and speech are straightforward, as everyday words are the entire universe of the 10 directions. Investigate clearly that the entire universe in 10 directions is everyday words. So this is another aspect. It's just our simple conversation now is this inconceivable, mirage-like appearance of one bright pearl that includes everything and excludes nothing and is not captured in words and speech, and is not apart from words and speech. It is the everyday activity of an ocean mouth and a mountain tongue of the Buddha. It's that kind of speech, too. Thus, one covers the mouth and covers the ears. This is the true suchness of the ten directions. So, I'd like to just make a little footnote, commentary about suchness we've been discussing in the class. And it's sounding like suchness is a little bit different than the one bright pearl. In the one bright pearl story, I'm proposing suchness, or the thoroughly established perfect nature of all phenomena, is Shren Sha's phrase, what's it have to do with understanding? What's the use of understanding? Or, in other words, understanding and words and knowing doesn't reach this one bright pearl. That non-reaching is what we call suchness. It's a non-reaching. It's the thorough establishment of emptiness. And so here, Dogen says, he's talking about all our ordinary speech is the whole universe and ten directions. But one covers the mouth and covers the ears, and that is the true suchness of the ten directions. Covering the mouth, covering the ears, where there's no speech and nothing heard. True suchness. Changsha continues further, the entire universe in ten directions is the whole body of a monk. And then Dogen's comment is kind of a nice thing, as we are celebrating Buddha's birthday tomorrow. Is today the 8th of April? So, April 8th is the traditional date. The eighth day of the fourth month in ancient China and Japan for celebrating Buddha's birth. So we'll do that tomorrow. And we'll do that by bathing baby Buddha, who, according to the sutras, right after he was born, he took seven steps on the earth and pointed up with one hand to the heavens and down with the other hand to the earth, like this, and said, you know, in the heavens above and the earth below, I alone am the world honored one. And he said it in in some Pali type dialect, and then he remembered that he was just a baby and he didn't know how to speak yet, so. Then it took him another like 5 years to speak his next words. But amazing that he could say that.
Which was the Mindfulness Sutra. At age 5.
Yeah, at age 5, right. So, Changsha is saying the whole universe in ten directions is the whole body of a monk. Dogen says, one hand points to heaven. This is heaven. One hand points to the earth. This is the earth. Thus, in the heaven above and earth below, I alone am the world-honored one. This is the entire world in ten directions. That's the whole body of a monk. I alone am the world-honored one. I alone. I, all, one. All together. I, that excludes nothing, is the whole body, covering all heaven and earth. The head, top, eyes, nostrils, skin, flesh, bones, and marrow, each is the monk's body that penetrates the entire 10 directions, and it does so without disturbing the entire 10 directions. Changsha continues, the whole universe in 10 directions is the radiant light of the self. The self means nostrils before the birth of your parents. The nostrils, being by accident in the hand of the self, are called the entire universe in 10 directions. Nostrils are this part of our face that, you know, if you single them out, they're actually, there's nothing there. It's just empty space. You can find some hairs and other stuff in there, but nostrils themselves are the emptiness. There's a lack of nose tissue. And so when we're meditating on emptiness, instead of meditating on the nose being just so, we can meditate on the nostrils being ungraspable, especially the nostrils before the birth of our parents. Though these nostrils, being by accident in the hand of the self, are called the entire universe in 10 directions, yet the self is right here, actualizing the fundamental point, Genjo Koan, opening the hall and seeing Buddha. All this is a reference to yesterday's story about Hey You. Although calling is easy and responding is difficult, when you're called, you turn your head. When you turn your head, what use can it be? What's the use of turning the head? Still, you turn your head toward the person who called. A meal waits for you to eat it. A robe waits for you to wear it. What a pity you don't take it while it wants you to. I've already given you 30 blows of the staff. Changsha continued, the entire universe in 10 directions is within the radiant light of the self. So his previous phrase was, the entire world in 10 directions is the radiant life, the radiant light of the self. Now he says, the entire universe in 10 directions is within the radiant light of the self. So the one bright pearl is the radiant light of the self, and the one bright pearl is within the radiant light of the self, and the radiant light of the self is within the one bright pearl. There's it's not a matter of inside and outside in this all-inclusive, inconceivable, ungraspable world that appears right now, that's all of this. It's not nothing, obviously, right? The eyelid, just one piece, is called the radiant light of the self. When it opens all of a sudden, it's called within. What you see in the eye is called the entire 10 directions. This being so, sleeping on the same bed, you both know that there's an opening in the cover. Changsha continues, in the entire world of the 10 directions, there is no single person that is not the self. Thus, each practitioner, each fist in the 10 directions cannot help but be the self. This is the wonderful conclusion. And we can say the same about the one bright pearl. There's no person who's not the one bright pearl. there's nobody who can even no one can help being such a pearl. The 10 directions of each and every self are intimately immersed in the 10 directions. How now are Bodhidharma's eye and Gotama's nostrils in the womb of a bare pillar? You know, right? Let me say, they come and go. The 10 directions leave everything to all 10 directions. So, because Dogen wants to cover everything about the entire universe and the 10 directions in this fascicle, he brings up one bright pearl. Xuan Sha, great master Tsung Yi, said, the entire universe in the 10 directions is one bright pearl. So this is just like, you know, a one paragraph commentary outside of our fascicle at hand on this phrase, on this saying. He doesn't quote the whole story about understanding and not understanding, just that Xuan Sha said the entire universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. Dogen says, from this we clearly know that one bright pearl is the entire universe in 10 directions. Those with divine heads and demon faces abide in this bright pearl as their grotto hut. Maybe referring to the black mountain cave of demons. That black mountain cave of demons is a cave in the wall of one bright pearl. Descendants of Buddha ancestors make it their eye. Buddhist householders regard it as the head, top, and fist. Beginners and latecomers regard it as putting on the robe and eating a meal. My late master Ru Jing called it a mud ball and threw it at my fellow practitioners. The one bright pearl is soft as the mud at low tide, but it can be packed together nicely into a ball and thrown at Dogen's fellow practitioners. As it is a move transmitted person to person, the eyeball of the ancestral school has been plucked out. When it's plucked out, the entire ancestral school makes a move. This bright pearl shines within the eyeball. And Dogen says some more, and just his last line is, know that vitalizing the nostrils is no other than the 10 directions. So that was a little divergence, but not really a divergence. And if all this sounds like absurdity and wild shenanigans, and we wonder, how can we understand any of that? You know what Xuan Sha would say. Yes.
I feel like I'm falling behind a little bit here.
Well, what's the use of staying with the pace? But please, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. As perhaps
Our conceptual, the one bright pearl can manifest as our conceptual mind asking, how can I understand this? Oh yes, the well, it's when Dogen was kind of broke one bright pearl into pearl and brightness, right? I think it was where he said, it was the first line on page 2. JP. Oh, you got it. Where Dogen says, is this what you're referring, where he says, which is to say, make a 10-foot pearl into a 10-foot brilliance or bright. And we talked about how there's 10-foot pearl that's the inconceivable dependent arising of the universe, and that manifests as 10 feet of luminous brightness emanating from all sides of the pearl in the form of particular things like a question.
And I think that flew too out of this, the line before it.
A foot of water into a foot of wave.
The last line of page 1.
Yes. Yeah.
In us. Might be, you know, this question.
Yes.
Which signifies that we're practicing with the concept of one bright pearl. I want to say we're trying to understand it, that we're just like we're doing today.
You say the concept of practicing with it. Because I think that's right. It's like we have an idea that we're in a Genzo-e sesshin and we're like trying to work with and somehow like get a little bit of a foothold somehow in a couple phrases of Dogen. But meanwhile, you could say the practice that's beyond or free from our concepts of practice is, I think, also another way of speaking about the one bright pearl itself. This, the all-inclusive 10 directions universe is practice, is the practice that's always happening, that we don't even know that we're doing, the practice that's happening even while we sleep, or as Kodo Suwaki Roshi says, describing zazen, is like the night train carries us even while we sleep. So when we're awake, we might feel like we're riding in the train, we're going from here to there, and we're making progress, we're going along. But then it's a sleeper train, and we go to sleep, but the train keeps going. We don't even notice. We're not making any effort, we're not doing anything, and yet we're being carried forward by the night train. And so that sense of practice is like the one bright pearl that's carrying us while we sleep and while we wake and while we eat and use the toilet and all these things. The one bright pearl is giving us our life. And then that 10-foot pearl can manifest as 10-foot brightness of, like, actually our the brightness of our awareness, thinking like, wow, this is amazing, we're sitting in a zendo, or we're using the toilet. Yes,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Building on Patrick's question, there are two kinds of questions, at least.
Mm-hmm.
One, maybe the kind of questions we're asking here are rhetorical, have to do with logic and propositions and models and things like that. And that's the existential question that goes to the heart of the nature of my being here, the nature of being present. And
what question is that?
How can a student like this understand?
Hmm.
And this is a deep question. This is a question of legitimacy.
Hmm.
Of, you know, what am I doing here?
Hmm.
As opposed to, well, let me see if I get this right.
Hmm.
So I think the practice, the manifesting of the pearl, I think, would have to be would have to include this deep existential inquiry, which may not happen in a class so much as it does on the cushion.
Mm.
So we bounce these two things, these two forms of questioning.
Mm. Yeah, I think we could say there's two forms. In a way, they're just one form from a certain angle. There's just inquiry or questioning, and then there's levels of depth. So there's working out the details, and I think that's the beauty of something like this kind of a Genzo Eisa Shin, where we can, or even a sutra study, we're working out, like, let me get the details right. What's exactly being said here, just for the sake of understanding the words and what they're pointing to, and then there's that deeper thing of like, oh, what are they really pointing to, or what's this really about, kind of like underneath the words? Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah.
And I think that those can happen, like, I don't know if simultaneously, but definitely like alternatingly, and hopefully we're doing some of both. And sometimes we get really caught up in the specifics of the words, and we'll make an effort to work with that, and I think we can't neglect that, because that's what we're actually doing. And then in the midst of that, little light beams from the pearl maybe will hit each of us at different times and with different phrases and with different questions. And that's the beauty of Dogen too, because each sentence Dogen throws out is like this light beam. And some of them are just like, what? Like, I'm gonna take like a little nap here during this sentence because it's too much. Like, yes, and it's like there's no, I don't feel any juice flowing with that sentence, so like, and I know there's gonna be a long convoluted explanation, so like, I'm gonna like skip over that. I feel that sometimes with reading Dogen, like, can we get through this one, because the next one feels juicier. And but who knows, for different people I think it's gonna come out differently, and Dogen's constantly shifting between something really straightforward, like the whole universe is one by pearl. Like, we all, I think, even before we talked about it, have some sense of like, that I can like, I resonate with that saying. It's such a classic Zen statement. But then to say, what was it? Know that vitalizing the nostrils is no other than the 10 directions. I actually think that's pretty good, but but you know, this thing about the great standard manifesting as the great function. I don't know. Different things are going to hit people in different ways, and I also think of those three types of prajna that we talked about in the class, right? The wisdom that comes from just hearing and conceptually understanding what the words of some teaching are saying. A kind of wisdom comes from like, oh, that's a way to kind of like We don't know, we never know what Dogen's really saying exactly, but like, I could see that that's a way that you could read this that fits in with the whole context. Make 1 foot of water into 1 foot of wave. Okay, we got a conceptual understanding, and then there's the investigative kind of questioning, which is a kind of wisdom from investigating and turning it around in our own experience. And that, I think, is closer to this existential kind of questioning. Maybe that we could even say that's what that is. It's like bringing it into the existential issue of my life and experience right now. And then that third type of wisdom that's actually not even a questioning. It's like the end of investigation. It's just, you're now just living as one bright pearl. So the first two types of wisdom are kind of like these two types of questioning that you mentioned, it seems to me. So, back to One Bright Pearl. We're up to the point of the next day. We're up to the next day. It's no longer yesterday. The next day, Shrenshaw asked the monk, "What is your understanding of the whole universe is one bright pearl?" So this is now. That's the question that the monk originally asked. Now Shrenshaw's asking back, "What's your understanding today of the whole universe is one bright pearl?" This expresses, yesterday I spoke the fixed dharma in asking what's the use of understanding, and today I use a different approach and ask, what do you understand? Today I speak the unfixed dharma, turning my back on yesterday with a smile. So fixed, I can't help making the connection to the thoroughly established character, the fixed character, the perfect character of all phenomena, suchness that is like a 1,000-foot-high iron wall that it doesn't appear. And there's no entry or into this thoroughly established or exit from it. It's just how things are not what we think they are. It's even how the bright pearl is not anything we can understand about it. So that's why I propose that the Shrenshaw's saying, what's it have to do with understanding, or what's the use of understanding, is the phrase expressing the thoroughly established nature. And that was yesterday's fixed dharma, when Shrenshaw said, yesterday I spoke the fixed dharma and asking what's the use of understanding. It's like, it's fixed in that it doesn't change. What's the use of understanding? Or, you know, that understanding or knowing will never reach this bright, dreamlike appearance of one bright pearl. It's that unreaching, that the understanding never defiling the one bright pearl, the clear awareness that words don't reach, the practice and realization that can't be defiled, or more the non-defilement of the practice and realization is thoroughly established in permanent, permanent time, and everlasting, everlasting time. Or as the Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra says, the other dependent character, the bright pearl, is not, it is, we could say, I think the way the sutra says it is, the one bright pearl, the other dependent, is not thoroughly established in permanent, permanent time, or everlasting, everlasting time, as being the imputational character, as being our understanding of it. But we could also say that the thoroughly established nature, the permanent, everlasting, thoroughly established nature of our experience right now is that our understanding never reaches the bright pearl. It's not just the bright pearl free of our understanding. It's the way that our understanding never reaches it. So that was yesterday's fixed dharma, saying just, what's the use of understanding? Just like stop right here, because any understanding that you try to have will never, ever, ever, in everlasting time, be able to touch this one bright pearl. But today we have an unfixed dharma. That's where we can actually ask, well, what's your understanding? How do you understand? Tell me about it in words, and let's get into it. Let's get conceptual. It's okay, because the fixed dharma and the unfixed dharma are very, very intimate. Not really two dharmas yet. We can talk about them like that. This expresses, yesterday I spoke the fixed dharma in asking, what's the use of understanding? And today I use a different approach and ask, what do you understand? Today I speak the unfixed dharma, turning my back on yesterday with a smile. So we might feel like deep, deep zazen. We may have moments of total peace and tranquil, non-arising, and then the bell rings, and we can turn our back on that period of zazen with a smile. Turn our back on that fixed dharma where nothing's arising, and just do some kinyin with a smile. Thich Nhat Hanh likes to say a half smile. Is that okay with that paragraph? That's, in a way, that's, I think to interpret it like this is one of the more straightforward things. Now this is gonna get a little tricky here. The monk said, the whole universe is one bright pearl, what's the use of understanding? Right, so he repeated back what Trenzha said. And Dogen says, this is nothing but a mimicry of Shrensha. I think that's the only translation where they actually say that, which sounds quite critical. They say it's a mimicry. So the other ones, I don't think say that. Let's see. Oh, let me just read a nice translation too of the previous paragraph. Cleary says, yesterday I spoke the definite principle. Today, using a second layer, he exudes energy. And Cleary has a footnote that says, this is like, you know, kind of like this manifestation side of like, you know, energetically expressing something. Whereas the fixed or definite principle is like, there's no, in a way, there's no energy there. It's just, it's non-arising, it's non-being, it's an emptiness. There's nothing we can call energy. But coming forth, there's energy. He is pushing yesterday over, nodding and laughing. I just like that phrase. And Kaz says, this is an expression that takes up yesterday's statement and adding another layer blows it back today. That's a little different feeling. His question today pushes down yesterday's nodding laugh. So that's saying that yesterday was nodding and laughing in the fixed Dharma. And this, maybe we could take, if we read it that way, we could take it as nodding like, yes, right, this is no problem. And today pushes that over and like, okay, now we've got a problem called. How do you understand? So the this is nothing but a mimicry. Nope. None of them mention that. They go right into the thief's horse in pursuit of the thief. So I don't know if that's Francis Cook's just wanting to clarify something that's not really in there or not. Because if you take that out, you can hear riding the thief's horse in pursuit of the thief is kind of a, that this monk's kind of like is going to catch Shrensha, the thief Shrensha, riding his own horse. His own horse of that phrase, right? He's saying Shrensha's this thief who's trying to steal away this monk's, grip on reality, something, that now he's gonna chase this thief riding on the thief's horse. Skillful means to use the very same horse and try to catch Shrensha with this. So even if it's, maybe we could say, if it's just mimicry, he's trying to use the thief's horse to catch the thief, but he can't catch Shrensha, as we're going to see in Shrensha's next line. But, so it's not clear whether he's skillfully riding this horse and actually going to catch this thief, or actually trying to catch the thief unsuccessfully. But you see that image of which is a classic Zen saying, using the thief's horse to catch the thief, in kind of in koan dialogues, especially picking up something that the teacher said, for example, and trying to then use that to like catch the one who said it and point out their error, something like that.
So instead of mimic, maybe he's trying to say, he's just recapitulating.
Yeah.
What you said.
Yeah, maybe mimicry doesn't have to be a negative accusation.
Or just imitating what the teacher said.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But say nothing but a mimicry. And I think that's usually how it's interpreted, is like, this, it wasn't creative. enough. It was just repeating the words back.
It wasn't authentic.
It wasn't authentic, yeah. And we do have many koans where one phrase is said and then the other person repeats back the same thing. So there is this style going on, but in this case, it's seen as not authentic because the teacher's asking freshly this question of how do you understand. In speaking as he did for the sake of the monk, Xuanzha was conducting himself in the form of a different species. Or another translation. In an ancient Buddha's explanation, what the Japanese says, it doesn't say Xuanzha, it says in an ancient Buddha's explanation, which, he interpreted as Xuanzha is the ancient Buddha. But I don't think it has to be seen that way. In an ancient Buddha's explanation for you, it is acting among different species, or an authentic Buddha speaking to you walks in the midst of various beings. So this is this kind of a strange phrase, acting among different species. That's also a Zen... classical Zen phrase that comes from, I think, various. Nan Chuan was one who used it, and also Cao Shan, Dong Shan's disciple. And so Cleary's footnote says, acting among different species is this technical term in Chinese Zen, meaning acting in the world in whatever forms may be appropriate. Cao Shan wrote, Bodhisattva's assimilation to different species means first understanding oneself, then after that entering the different kinds in birth and death to save others. Having already realized nirvana, they do not abandon creatures in birth and death. Helping themselves and others, they vow that all sentient beings shall attain Buddhahood. Cao Shan discusses various types or aspects of acting among different beings, among different species, but in general, different species means the world of differentiation, all kinds of different forms and states. So, if we take that as the explanation, it's like... it's about compassion, sounds like. It's just about being willing to enter the mud of the confused world to help beings living there. And we can see that as similar to, yesterday I spoke the fixed dharma, the nirvanic dharma, the unarising, unceasing, constantly in a state of nirvana dharma of what's it got to do with understanding. And today I turn my back on that and enter the world of dualistic expression and conceptuality and discussing how do you actually understand. We know this ultimately can't be understood, and yet let's talk about it. How we understand, enter among different species, such as the species of this monk, and to help. In speaking as he, so then it does sound like it's referring to Xuanzha, if we take it that way, that by asking, well, how do you understand? Let's talk about how you understand and how I understand. Entering into the species of unfixed dharma. Nanchuan, who did use this phrase, was known for near the end of his life. He said, "After I die, I will be born as a water buffalo at the bottom of this hill." And something like his students said, "Well, can we come with you? You know, can we want to be born in the realm where you are, teacher." And he said, you have to come with grass in your mouth." Something like that. So this is being willing to be born quite literally among other species. Yeah, like, I've been this Zen teacher, it's been a great life, sitting here eating the rice from these fields that the peasants have been plowing, and the peasants, you know, they're kind of like working for us here to make this rice possible, but actually the water buffaloes are working for the peasants. So I'd like to just be born as the water buffalo and chew on some grass and pull the plows for the later monks in this monastery. Born among different species. So then Dogen says, "Reverse the light and illumine within yourselves." How many are there of what is the use of understanding? So, reverse the light and illumine yourself is this phrase, Ekko Hensho. I think I maybe have talked about it before because it's a really important Zen meditation phrase. Ekko Hensho means literally turn the light and shine back. So in the Fukan Zazengi, there's this phrase, our translation maybe says, turn the light around and illumine the self. But really it says, Ekko Hensho, just turn the light and shine back. And in the Xin Xin Ming, the Song of the Trusting Mind, we say, turn the light of awareness around and shine it back, or something like that. It might not be the full Ekko Hensho, but it's a variation on those four characters. And for further, just as a footnote, I think there's wonderful teachings that make it seem as if this turning the light around and shining back is the central meditation of Zen. And Thomas Cleary, in this Shobo Genzo collection, in his introduction, he has a long description of this, with many quotes from different Zen teachers on Ekko Hensho. But basically, it's like the light of awareness that's aware of external objects and external world. That's our usual mode of light. Light is just a poetic way of saying light of our awareness. Turn that light of awareness around and shine it back at, I think to say the self is not quite right. It's more like turn it back and shine it back on the source of the awareness. Look back to where thoughts are arising from. And when there's this one case 32 in the Book of Serenity where who is it? I can't quite remember, but it's like the teacher says, "Well, others, are you experiencing, you know, houses and fields and water buffaloes and all these things?" "Yes." "Well, now turn the light of awareness around and shine back. And are there so many things here?" And the student says, when I get here, I don't see anything at all. So this could be a way to talk about meditating on the thoroughly established, actually. Use awareness to turn back to the source of awareness, where we could say the source of awareness is also like the other dependent source giving rise to everything, but because it's inconceivable and ungraspable, conceptual thought can't get a foothold, and it just ceases, and therefore in that story the monk could say, I don't see anything at all. So Ekko Henjo, reverse the light and illumine within yourselves. How many are there of what is the use of understanding? And this may be a reference to this koan of, when I get here, I don't see any of these myriad things at all. So Dogen may be saying, turn the light and shine back, and then, now how many things are there when you do that? And instead of saying, I don't see anything at all, he says, how many are there of what's the use of understanding? How many are there of what's the use of understanding? And if we're saying what's the use of understanding is ungraspability, is the thoroughly established non-establishment, the perfect character, how many are there of that? How many thoroughly established characters are there? Like, so we say, like, every phenomena has three characteristics. So the book has a thoroughly established character. That's the way that, like, our ideas about this particular book don't reach what it is. So that's the thoroughly established character of the book. But then, what's the thoroughly established character of the stick? The way that the ideas about the stick don't reach the appearance of the stick. So, this is, I think, an interesting question in the terms of meditating on the sutra also. Like, are these two different thoroughly established characters? Are there two different emptinesses? Or, thousands of, does everything have its own emptiness? Form is emptiness, and feeling is emptiness, and so on. But are those particular emptinesses, or is there just one emptiness? Because it's not a thing. It's not something that you could count. It's just a way that, in terms of our Yogacara Sutra, it's just the way that our ideas don't reach things. But because there's many things, is the way that our ideas don't reach things, is that non-reachability, like a different non-reachability for each thing? Can you understand this question? I think it's an interesting point, because in a way we could say, yes, each thing has a particular, each phenomena has a particular thoroughly established character. They definitely, each phenomena has its own imputational character. That's very clear. We call this a book and this a stick. Those are very different. Those are never the same. And the other dependent character also is obviously different. The way that the book appears before we name it, and the way the stick appears before we name it, are also different. And yet that's, now we're into the territory of, well, if we call those just aspects of one bright pearl, they dependently arise in different ways, and yet their dependent arising is also one dependent arising, is one bright pearl. So for the imputational character, it's always distinct and different. For the other dependent character, in a way, it's different arisings, it's different radiance on the surface of the pearl. And then we get to the thoroughly established character, the way that they're empty. It's more like there aren't like different kinds of emptiness. There aren't, I mean, in a way we could say there's different kinds, like in this chapter 7 of the sutra, these three types of lack of own being. But in another way, even if we say there's these three, or we say there's thousands, there's just lack of own being. There's just, because it's not a thing, emptiness is just thoroughly established in permanent time, everlasting time, pervading everything, applying to everything equally. And because it's not a thing, it doesn't have multiple numbers.
I don't know that I can. That it makes. I don't know that it's useful to think of everything having its own emptiness in an ineffable book. I mean, that's what Plato was about. You know, forms and such. You know, the ideals.
Yeah.
I think what this is saying, and we touched on it yesterday, is that the function of the pearl. The function of the thoroughly established manifests in the operation of inquiry. In being fully present, what we call beginner's mind, you know, that raw, simple, simply observing, without even maybe a thematic component to it, like I'm looking at this, you know, ultimately that pure simplicity that's unconstructed is manifested in pure inquiry, which can have no words, no theme. So I think that's got to be the point. That, you know, wherever you are, wherever you go, there you are. You know, that the ineffable is just the ineffable.
Yeah, and so you're right that it may not be so useful to look at different things having different emptinesses, and yet it may be useful just in the sense that to keep it from just becoming this abstract idea of like, yeah, just emptiness, everything's empty, cool. It's more like, well, but now I'm relating to this book, and I'm, you know, I'm maybe grasping it as my book, and I have some stuck relationship with this book. So then it might be useful to like, well, let's not look at emptiness in general to say, oh, it's all empty, why are you grasping the book? Let's look very carefully through inquiry at like, what, you know, how am I grasping this book? And that place, that kind of very pinpoint place in the mind where the mind is grasping the book is the place where the particular book is empty. So I think there can be something valuable about just to keep it from becoming an abstract idea, and yet we don't want to fall into Plato's thing either, of you know, there's different like some kind of essence of the book, essence of the emptiness being some kind of essence, because actually emptiness is defined as the absence of essence. But anyway, I think this part of Dogen is, I'm hearing it as playing with this idea of, are there multiple emptinesses? Because I'm interpreting what's the use of understanding as emptiness, right, as the thoroughly established. So if we say, how many are... So when you turn the light around and shine back where you don't find anything at the source of mind, now how many are there of what's the use of understanding? Now this is, of course, Dogen saying this is very, it's just like, it's not even a correct sentence, right? But if you say, what's the use of understanding, or interpret it as understanding never reaches what's happening, how many are there of understanding not reaching what's happening? Do you see how he could be saying it like that? When you turn the light around and shine back, how many types are there of of our thoughts not reaching what the appearance of what's happening. Is that a gotcha?
I think the trouble I'm having is seeing, I can follow your this thought process,
mm-hmm.
but I can't relate it to what I see as what's happening in that paragraph.
Oh.
Which is the back and forth with the monk, and which is the intention of Huangsha being fresh and pure when and his speaking for the sake of the monk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the monk not speaking freshly and purely.
Mm-hmm.
And then saying, reverse the light and look at yourself. Where did this come from? Did this come from your... When you said, what is the use of understanding, where did that come from?
Ah, when the monk said it. Mm-hmm. Yep, okay.
Speaking to the monk. I get confused with where all the little quotations are.
Yeah.
Reverse the light and illumine within yourself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, the quotation mark after species is a typo.
Kind of extra.
It's actually footnote number 11, so that's a mistake.
So I wondered if it would help if we go to the next sentence about the sugar cakes and
yeah.
cakes to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Together.
But I think this is a really good point that this because the original story is so dynamic because it has these two things repeated twice, and then Dogen's going through it line by line, but which is it the first repetition he's talking about, or the second, which has a totally different meaning? So I think you're right that we're at the section where it's the mimicry, right? It's the monk repeating back. So that's good to keep in mind. So, but then we have. Then we do have at least this interpretation that talking about Xuanxia and speaking as he did for the monk, he was conducting himself in the form of a different species, or he was trying to help this person by asking, "What's your understanding?" That's how I would take that, and then we could say. Illuminating the source. How many are in the monk's response, right? How many are there of what's this use of understanding? Let's keep going ahead. If I try to express it, there may be 7 sugar cakes or 8 herb cakes, but this is teaching and practice north of the Xiang River and south of the Tan. Oh, so now it's clear. So the 7 sugar cakes or 8 herb cakes is footnotes say this is just referring to myriad things, uncountable things. There's no particular deep meaning. They're just a strange Zen way of talking about multiplicity. But this is teaching and practice north of the Xiang and south of the Tan. So there's these two different interpretations of that phrase. One that that I think I appreciate most is that the Xiang River was in China is south, and the Tan River is north. So, you know, north of this river and south of this river is this big area. And one note says this was this Chinese kind of colloquial phrase, kind of like 6 on one hand or 6 on the other. It's kind of saying like, oh, where do you live? I live south of this upper river. And then these other people, where do you live? I live north of this lower river. They're actually, it's the same area that they're talking about, but in these two different ways. So I think that's just a really nice phrase that could fit in here as so how many are there? What's the use of understanding? Well, there may be all these uncountable ways, uncountable forms of what's the use of understanding, but they're all, in the end, the same territory. They're just different ways of talking about it. And that's what, and I think that could fit into, like, there's this, you know, there's a emptiness of this book and an emptiness of this stick and uncountable emptinesses of all these different things. But it's all the same territory, actually. There's only really one emptiness of all things. So that's one interpretation. Or there's only one, what's the use of understanding? I mean, if we use the phrase instead of emptiness, what's the use of understanding this book? What's the use of understanding the stick? What's the use of understanding anything? It's like, it's, we can ask that question about rice cakes and sugar cakes and all kinds of different cakes. Ask about each kind of cake. What's your understanding of that cake? And yet they're all just different ways of talking about the same territory between these rivers. So it's like, it's like multiplicity and unity in terms of what's the use of understanding. Because, and then maybe just pointing at the fact that what's the use of understanding really can be applied to anything, and it just like cuts off speculation about anything. That's its function. Now, if we go back to, are we talking about the monk's mimicry saying, what's the use of understanding? One interpretation might be that, well, these are two different types. There was Xuanzha's, what's the use of understanding, is a kind of like a sugar cake, a sweet sugar cake, and then there was a the monk's, what's the use of understanding, is like an herb cake. But really, then Dogen's, you know, so into non-dualizing things, right? So he's saying, we look at it and we say, this is just, you know, the way we've been talking about it. This is just mimicry. It wasn't so fresh. He was just repeating back the teacher's words. But, so they really are different. But actually, one's just south of this river and one's just north of this river. It's actually, even if it's a mimicry, it's still just what's the use of understanding. It's still completely no problem, right? It's still completely, it's undefiled mimicry. And this is a lot of what Dogen does, is he takes what seems to be the deluded person in a discussion and point out how they're actually like manifesting Buddha. Just like, well, you're living in the, those living in the dark demon's cave are actually in the bright pearl.
That would fit with what the next paragraph with sun-faced Buddha.
Yeah. So actually I think that because we're talking about different numbers of what's the use of understanding, we do have actually two different what's the use of understandings in the story. So as we're speaking about this, I'm feeling more and more that that's actually, I think, what he's pointing to, right? So how how many are there of what's the use of understanding? There's Xuanzha's and then there's the monks, right? Those are two different what's the use of understandings. And there may be these, this, you know, one or seven sugar cakes or eight herb cakes. But this is teaching and practice. It's all teaching and practice in this, you know, north of this river, south of that river. Now, the other interpretation of this thing about the rivers is completely different. Which one, where's the, Here's a note that in case 18 of the Blue Cliff Record, there's this saying that yellow gold is found in the land south of the Xiang and north of the Tang. So maybe even that was maybe that was based on this colloquial phrase of saying that yellow gold is found is in this area, and sometimes we see it, the yellow gold, as like this from up above, and sometimes we see it from down below north of this river. So maybe they're connected, not so totally different, but it's this issue of yellow gold is found between these rivers. Ordinary people beyond number are engulfed in it. So this is saying this area between the rivers is like this one bright pearl, this totally valuable, everything made of gold, and everybody, all the ordinary people living in China are engulfed in the gold, which is a lot like are engulfed in one bright pearl. So, because this is often Dogen style, is to equalize the differences, saying, well, there is this one answer, and then there's this other one that's like mimicry, but, and we can see them really as different kinds of cakes and different things, and yet, in the end, ultimately, they're all just what's the use of understanding. They're all pure gold, and sages like Shuanxia and ordinary people like this monk are both engulfed in it, whether they know it or not.
Would it be a mistake to say that these questions, that one of these questions is pointing towards dismissing understanding of having any usefulness at all? Wouldn't that be a mistake to make that conclusion? That was an anti-intellectual, anti-thinking type thing.
But what's the use of understanding?
Yeah,
is it dismissal? Yeah, no, I don't think it's I don't take it like that. Yeah, or yesterday I was mentioning that I don't hear it as kind of a criticism of the monk to say, like, what do you mean? What you know, just kind of writing him off, like, you're asking how can I understand? Well, what's the use of understanding? Just go away. Not like that. I see it as like, please meditate very carefully on the thoroughly established nature of all phenomena by actually like asking, like you're asking, how do I understand? I'm actually answering quite directly by saying, please investigate what is the use of understanding, or what does understanding have to do with it, is the other translation.
I ask that pointedly because in other places I've been derisively accused of, well, you're into emptiness. You're just into emptiness. I'm into the story. You know, it's kind of dismissive. You know, like, well, if you're not telling a story, I don't want to bother with you. You know, you're just engaged in some kind of thing in your head. And I find this in lots of places, not just Zen centers, but lots of places where there's an anti-intellectual element that actually defeats the whole purpose that they're there. In other words, I'm all about my small self, I'm all about, you know, the perfect articulation of what's important to me, you know, this kind of thing. So I don't think this could, that can possibly be an interpretation of what's the use of understanding.
That, you know, No, I don't see it like that either. It's all the whole issue of this whole story seems to be about what exactly is understanding and how do we use it to be free from suffering and enjoy living in one bright pearl. And it's a very dynamic thing. This is why Dogen seemed to like this story, very dynamic story about understanding.